This is a CNA podcast.
Welcome to Heart of the Matter, and I'm your host, Lin Su Ling. For so long, it was an interdependent relationship like no other. Malaysians and Singaporeans crossing the causeway to work, meet family, eat, and shop. We contribute to each other's economy and we share history and culture. But then on a Monday in March, an announcement by the Malaysian government to ban all travel into the country reverberated across the causeway. Suddenly, the over 300,000 travellers who cross one of the world's busiest land border each day had to make alternative plans. 100,000 Malaysian workers working in Singapore had 48 hours to decide whether to head home or find some way to live here as companies who employed them scrambled to find accommodation. Yet here we are, 6 months later, and ministers from both sides have agreed to reopen the borders and allow essential travel, a bit with restrictions, with applications opening from Monday, August 10th onwards. But just how needle-moving are these new schemes? How have businesses in Singapore and Malaysian workers coped since? And what does a post-pandemic relationship between Singapore and Malaysian workers look like? My guests calling in today are Darius Lim, Assistant CEO for Global Business at the Singapore Business Federation.
Hi. Hi, everyone.
And Dr. Serena Rockman, visiting fellow at the ISEAS Yusof Ishak Institute for Stanfield Research in Johor.
Hi. Nice to meet you all online.
Hi, everybody. So let's start first to talk about the new schemes that applications will open from Monday onwards. Now, in particular, Singapore and Malaysia will allow work permit holders through the periodic commuting arrangement. But wouldn't you say the devil's in the details? Because some will see, yes, a shorter stay-home period of 7 days, but they will need a swab test. Travel's only allowed every 90 days, and they can't take public transport when they first cross over. So what reactions have you seen from Malaysian workers and the Singapore businesses who employed them, and how many do you think will take up the scheme?
First, I'll say that this new arrangement is certainly welcomed by the Singapore companies. I think we got to look at this in context. The Malaysian employees and workers are an intrinsic part of the whole Singapore business environment, and they play a very crucial role, especially in companies. So when the MCO took place, there was quite a significant disruption to the Singapore companies. The companies had to adapt to different ways to coping without having their Malaysian employees or co-workers together. They are certainly looking forward to a number of them coming back. And I think we'll have to see, you know, how this rolls out, because there are also other issues in there which have to be resolved. The need to look for short-term accommodation for the workers, for the Malaysian employees. There are also the additional things that you have mentioned on the tests. All these have to be factored in. We'll have to give it some time. But overall, I would say the Singapore companies are certainly looking forward to it.
What's your take, Serena? Are you hearing about how workers are reacting to this scheme and how many will be taking this up?
I'm actually one of the 300,000 that used to commute daily to work in Singapore and then go home to Johor. So when the borders closed, I was also part of the many, many people who were scrambling to get back to Malaysia on time before they shut the doors on us. And then since then, I think the people I would be more aware of are really the blue-collar workers. So these are the people who live in Johor, the immediate areas. Some of them have moved into the middle 40 bracket because they were working in Singapore. With a dollar, their income multiplies by three. So initially, there were those who decided to stay on because the bus services were providing accommodation. But then after 3 months, a lot of them got wary. They couldn't see their family, close family members died, and they couldn't come back. On the other side, there were the people who were dying for the borders to open because they had run out of money. A lot of them did not have enough savings to cover their higher costs than other people because of their higher salaries. They had invested in things like homes and all of this, and they had to pay off those debts. So those people really wanted to come back. And so there was a lot of excitement, and there's always these questions of when's the border going to open. What a lot of them didn't realize is that when the borders open, there are so many restrictions. And a lot of the blue-collar workers who cannot afford to stay in Singapore, cannot afford to pay for food and accommodation in Singapore, cannot afford to go in for extended periods of time. So initially they said 2 weeks, now it's 7 days, but they still have to stay there for an extended period of time. Where are they going to stay? And a lot of people have, say, elderly relatives, so they can't go in for an extended period of time. So there are still a lot of issues. I'm hearing now people saying, gosh, it's actually quite difficult to go in and do this work. Is it worth it? I think some of us really should try to find work in Malaysia instead.
Could you tell us where the scheme has fallen short? Because it sounds like you're saying it won't make a difference unless daily commute is allowed. Is that what you think they want?
the bulk of the, say, the blue-collar workers, which really are the maximum of the people who are going in every day. These are the guys on the bikes, the guys on the bus with me. These are blue-collar workers who work in the factories. They're the cleaners. They do the kind of work that really Singaporeans don't want to do or cannot do. And they struggle to afford to stay in Singapore. During the circuit breaker, for us it was MCO, but I think during the circuit breaker there were a lot of media reports on Malaysians stranded sleeping at the MRT stations. These are the guys who can't afford to find accommodation. These are the guys who perhaps work for cleaning companies and the companies are not going to pay for them to stay in Singapore. And then there's the added cost of the quarantine, the swab test, and when you convert that into RM, it's a lot of money.
So just taking a step back, right, Darius, when the MCO closed off Malaysia's borders in March, it was quite sudden, although people were given 48 hours. Was the business community taken by surprise? And could you share maybe a bit about what the reactions were of companies then?
If you look at how the companies immediately reacted, I think the first response was really to see to their Malaysian colleagues they knew were affected. Many of them were stranded. Some of them were daily commuters and many of them needed help with accommodation, day-to-day, daily necessities. The immediate response for the Singapore companies was not so much about what impact this would have on the business, but really it was more so about how are we going to ensure that your Malaysian friends and colleagues were taken care of. It. That was a very good sign. But it really goes to show how intertwined the relationship is with the Malaysian workers, employees, as well as their Singapore counterparts. That was the immediate reaction. And thereafter, about just being adaptive and dealing with the environment, it wasn't a case where the flow of Malaysian workers stopped and business continued, because the environment also changed from a business perspective. And things generally slowed down. The companies also had to adapt to that. The immediate response really was for Singapore companies and their care towards the Malaysian co-workers.
But that's the thing. A lot of charities and organizations had stepped forward, even Singaporeans, to offer lodging when the announcement was made because of the reports of people not having a place to stay at night. Yep. There were makeshift living quarters and authorities even provided $50 a night for workers for 40 nights. So there was a mushrooming of support. Yep. Why couldn't businesses who employed these Malaysian workers mount a stronger response on their own?
I think they did. Many of their stories were not reported. They definitely did, where they were taking in their colleagues into their homes. Many companies paid for the short-term accommodation in hotels just to tide the workers over. I think there are many stories that were not reported. Certainly at a company level, many things were done by the Singapore company.
Serena, can you tell us a little bit about the Malaysian workers in Singapore? We know that there are about 1 million Malaysians in Singapore, and this ranges from those with Singapore permanent residency, work permits, and even long-term visit holders. But it's hard to kind of find more information about who they are. Can you paint a picture for our listeners on what their profiles are, what sort of job types or sectors they are in?
You know, there's so many Malaysians in Singapore. You could get on a train, there'd be 10 people, four may be foreigners, then out of the remaining six, half could be Malaysian, Singaporean. You could be working with them in a company in Singapore, and I did this too. For the longest time, I had no idea they're Malaysian because we are essentially the same people. It was just politics that split us. There are those who have gone to Singapore, married Singaporeans, become PRs, become citizens, and they tend to have higher level jobs. Many researchers, my colleagues, many are Malaysian, and Singapore is their home. And then you have those who come in with me on the bus on a Monday and they stay in Singapore until end of the week. So that's why Monday and Friday bus jams are the worst, because they stay there during the week because it's just too exhausting to travel daily. So they rent a place, or I've heard in some areas, you know, if they're cleaners, they just kind of sleep in the storeroom and do what they can to get by because it's too expensive to rent. These people, they can range from hairdressers. If you go to a hairdresser in Singapore, chances are you are having your hair cut by a Malaysian. They could be technicians, they could be engineers, they could be factory workers, cleaners. The range is huge. If you go to a cafe and you walk past and you see two people conversing in Malay, but one is Chinese, one is Indian, you know for sure they're Malaysian.
That's really funny.
So the range is huge. The ones who come in daily by motorbike, they travel from either Causeway or Second Link. And because they're mobile, they can go anywhere. They might stay within immediate Johor Bahru area, but there are also some that stay further away. There are those who come in by bus, and some of those who come in on the factory buses, they leave home at 4:30 in the morning. They get across the border by about 5 plus. That's about the time that I'm standing in bus queue, 5:30 to 6, and they come back in the dark. So they're spending like more than 12 hours either on the road or at work, and then they come back for like 4 hours.
But that's the thing, like with such a huge, long, painful commute experience and having to rent a place, if you do decide to try to skip that altogether, why do Malaysians want to work in Singapore?
Because it's three times the income. So if you're working as a cleaner and you get $750, you times that by three and you bring it back, that's more than 2,000 ringgit or something.
But if you spend most of your time here and the cost of living is the Singapore standard, are you really able to bring back all that money?
But they don't live there. That's why. So they get on the bus, they tap out their own food, they sit in the factory, they work, then they come back. They sleep on the bus. On the way into the bus stops, you will see lots and lots of food stalls. So everybody tapas their food for the whole day and then they come back. So they don't actually spend the money in Singapore other than to pay taxes. And they bring that money back for their families. As opposed to them working in Malaysia and getting 750 ringgit for being a cleaner. It's a huge income difference and people are willing to go through the pain to do this.
And with so many Malaysians potentially stuck across the causeway too, still up until today, Darius, you talked a little bit about how businesses are trying their best to cope with this. There has been some impact, but they're doing their utmost to adapt. Could you say a little bit more about how businesses have been impacted in Singapore? Who are these businesses that have been impacted?
Let's just zoom in a little bit on which industries you'd find a lot of Malaysian workers. The two societies and even business communities are so intertwined. It's impossible to try to split hairs. Okay? But there are a few obvious ones. So in Singapore, for example, your construction, your manufacturing, many of your design consulting firms who take on these renovation projects in our homes, a lot of their technical expertise provided for by Malaysians. And these are deep expertise required, whether it's in the work for visualization or it could be in the space of electrical or technical drawings or even masonry for that matter. An immediate impact on this industry obviously was that a number of projects had to be slowed down or had to be put off simply because that level of expertise wasn't available to be tapped on by the Singapore companies. Over the long term, it will be difficult for the Singapore companies to continue.
So just to clarify, right, these are works that are not physical. Why can't they work from home, for instance? Because all of us are remote working across the causeway or otherwise. Why can't that work continue?
Some companies have certainly tried. I think we speak to a number of the design consulting firms. They certainly have tried. But it really depends. If the work is administrative or it can be done over the digital means, I think that's certainly possible. But there are certain limitations now. And in many of these firms, sometimes the bosses just prefer to have that person in the room with them. There's something to be said about having that relationship and being able to at least have a proper discussion. They're certainly doing that. And I think that's one of the things they're doing to survive.
So Serena, I just want to throw this back over to you. With the border controls imposed in March, is Malaysia concerned about unemployment? Because when a lot of Malaysian workers return to Malaysia, ostensibly they would be trying to find work. But in a COVID world, most countries are experiencing an economy that's seen a downturn.
Across the board in Malaysia, unemployment, retrenchment, loss of jobs, shutdowns of companies, this is happening. Having the masses of people working in Singapore have to come back is just an additional burden. The other reason why many people choose to work in Singapore, they say, is because they can't find jobs that pay as well in Malaysia. So that is an issue as well. Now that the virus has happened and they're stuck here and they can't go into Singapore to get jobs, I just read that people who try to get jobs cannot get long-term jobs because the employers would be like, oh, you work in Singapore, once the borders open, you're going to run. And the workers themselves admit that they cannot commit to not running away. So they struggle to get jobs. There is a burden. If you just go around Glampatang, where I live, you will see people now selling durian from the back of their truck. And if you sit and talk to them, they'll say things like, oh, I've been working in Singapore for 17 years. Now I can't go back. So I have to do this to make a living. Suddenly we've got people selling asam boy at the traffic lights. And you ask them, bro, why are you doing this? And they'd be like, you know, I used to work in Singapore. So now I have to sell asam at the traffic light to survive. This is a common thing. But for some, the option of leaving family behind and working in Singapore for 3 months at a stretch and not being able to come back is not something they can take, especially if they've got young children, especially if they've got elderly parents to care for. And this is why people are willing to do the commute. There are people who have given that up and chose to work in Singapore. And then they see when there's a family disaster, like somebody passes on, they can't come back. And so everybody's now afraid. Which one is more important? For the bulk of the people who are working in Singapore, they're starting to reconsider which is more important, all this money that we can get, or family, quality of life, being here, we struggle, but at least we're with our family. There are many people in Johor who did not originate in Johor, but set up home here and are renting because they were working in Singapore. I've heard of many who have given up their rental and gone back to their villages elsewhere in the country. That's how bad it is.
So I just want to pass this ball over to Darius as well. We started to talk about the economic conditions in Malaysia. The reality also is that in Singapore, it's not an entirely rosy picture, where the latest jobless rate has been rising since the last couple of months, the highest since the global financial crisis right now. And MOM Minister Josephine Teo had actually said that the job situation has not hit rock bottom yet. Now, there are stories of Malaysian work pass holders who've been terminated because subsidies to help Singapore companies pay local employees aren't extended to foreigners. So, Darius, in your talks with businesses, do you sense that there are more plans to lay off foreign workers, which include Malaysians, in the months ahead?
No business will want to lay off their workers, Malaysians, Singaporeans alike. That decision to lay off a worker is actually a very, very tough one. You'll never find a business that resorts to that very easily. The pain that is born at this time is born on everyone. It's not just on the Singaporeans, but also on the Malaysians. And it is a very difficult time. The government, the companies, we're all trying to get by this. If you're asking me if we detect that Malaysians are getting the raw end of the stick more so than Singaporeans, I would say my answer to that emphatically is no.
But do you think that COVID-19 and these travel restrictions have prompted a rethinking on the part of Singapore businesses, just as Serena mentioned, that there seems to be a rethinking on the part of Malaysian workers? And what do you think is the biggest lesson that businesses are taking away from this?
If you keep it within the context of Malaysia, it is impossible to cut a very fine line between not just the two countries, but between how the business community interacts. This is likely to go on forever. What happens in COVID-19 is that we're just going to have to find new ways to update this relationship and move on. So the companies are doing that. So we discuss a bit of this. For certain jobs, if we cannot have the Malaysian employee or Malaysian co-worker in Singapore, but that skill is still a very highly valued skill and it's possible to do it while the person is in Malaysia, I think companies are already looking at it and they're adapting. Is it always easy finding a local person in Singapore to take over the Malaysian role? It is actually not, simply because the Malaysian workers have been with us for decades. And over time, there are just certain roles where Singaporeans have not developed that same level of skill sets. And so companies would still always prefer to have the Malaysian staff doing some of these roles, which require very deep and technical expertise.
But what is it that Singaporeans are missing? Surely they also have the same expertise. Singaporeans are well-educated. They bring themselves to polytechnics, university. They have that paper qualification. What's the secret sauce that Singapore workers are missing?
I don't think it's about whether they are missing. I think sometimes it's just a question of generational interest. Society evolves, interests evolve. There are just certain vocations or jobs that younger Singaporeans have a different level of interest, let's just say. And it is difficult sometimes to find Singaporeans to do these jobs. So companies will have to adapt and evolve. So they will have to find new resources to do this. They'll have to find new ways to engage the Malaysian employees or workers to do this. And they will. For now, I think the COVID has quite a dampening effect on business, but this is going to end. Over the longer term, the COVID will definitely force the companies to evolve, and certainly going digital is one way to do so. As the companies learn to grapple and see how digitalization can really help them access to markets, bring on people to develop projects for them, even though they're not in Singapore, this is how companies will evolve, and we will see.
So I'm going to ask you one more question before I throw over to Serena, just to really press the point, the perennial question of what some call Singapore's unhealthy, even unsustainable reliance on foreign talent, foreign workers, come up from time to time. And I think COVID has also shot a spotlight on that because national borders are closed, people scramble back to their home countries. In Singapore, though, these sentiments usually concern white-collar professional jobs or blue-collar workers in jobs that Singaporeans don't really want. Where do Malaysian workers feature in this discussion?
Among all the foreign talent that we have in Singapore, the closest relationship that Singapore has is with the Malaysians. And that is why you see Malaysians working everywhere, not just in the technical vocations, but at very senior level positions in the Singapore corporates. which is very, very rare. That is really a clear reflection and indication of how close the relationship is. You don't see it with any other nation. There's been much contribution by the Malaysian workers and employees to the Singapore businesses, and this is likely to go on. What will evolve is the nature at which this happens. But certainly this will have to go on. And it is a very different relationship. I would say it's probably the closest relationship we have with a foreign country at the business level.
So Serena, you've talked about how COVID-19 is prompting a rethinking on the part of Malaysian workers who are rethinking whether to work in Singapore. Where do you think they'll go from here and what alternatives do they have?
The thing about Malaysians is that they're quite resilient. So if they hit a brick wall, they'll find a way to get around it or climb over it or something, which is why they're willing to set up little stalls, sell things by the road, anything to get by. Perhaps this is why Malaysians might be hired more, no offense, than some Singaporeans, is because they're more tenacious in getting around difficulties, and therefore they make good employees in that sense. They're able to overcome difficulties in many ways. I don't know how things can change, but if I may go back to the earlier discussion with Darius, is that a lot of this is focusing, or what's been said, is focusing on the higher level, higher income employees. My concern is always with the bottom of the pyramid. And so there are a lot of Malaysians who cannot work from home. They work in Singapore, but they're cleaners. They work at Old Chang Kee. They work at McDonald's. That it's not possible to work from home in these conditions. One, Singapore loses this pool of workers. But two, the Malaysians who work there cannot go back there and do this work. And when you have an income like that, it's also not feasible to think about forking out the money to stay in Singapore and look for food and accommodation. So this is an issue that I think will not be easily overcome as long as this pandemic is an issue. As long as we have to stay in either country for a quarantine period, this is very difficult to overcome. I don't know how companies are going to deal with this. I never thought that far. But for the workers who have decided, I can't afford to stay in Singapore in a quarantine condition for so long, or I can't afford to come back and then be stuck in quarantine for so long, the option really is just to stay in Malaysia and try to find a job. Jobs are not necessarily available. Employees might be worried that they will run. So they just have to make do. And then that's why you have lots of pop-up entrepreneurs selling food by the roadside, doing whatever it takes. A lot of people have either been retrenched or stopped working, and they're working as Food Panda, but they're willing to do it. They'll do whatever it takes to feed their family. It's just what is the strain on the long-term economics of their financials, whether they can pay their debts. Once the moratorium is ended, it's going to hit even harder. The toll on mental health, nobody's talking about. These are real issues. And this, I feel, is the bulk of the people who cannot work from home and the bulk of the people who cross the border with me every day and night.
So I think Darius will fight you on you saying that Malaysian workers are more resilient than Singapore workers.
Sorry.
Just want to get your both final thoughts on where you see this relationship going between Singapore businesses and Malaysian workers for the next few years, especially since the pandemic will likely rage on without a vaccine.
I don't know what people are going to do if there's no vaccine and this is the status quo and it's going to be like this forever. I'm really blessed. I still have a contract. I can still work from home. From what I hear, according to the government, they want to rebuild traditional economies, find people jobs in rural areas. If they can do that, then maybe the Malaysian workers who are depending on Singapore can find jobs here and not have to go across. That might be better for their mental health, their families, their whatever. Maybe financially, they'll just have to get used to a lower standard of living than the 40 bracket that they moved up to for a while. At the end of the day, you just have to weigh your options and do what's safest and deal with what comes.
The answer lies in going digital, as cold as that may sound. If COVID maintains, companies will have to use whatever digital means to develop new businesses, their processes, how that would impact the kind of staff that they have, the numbers.
It would be impossible for my hairdressers to go digital, right? There are so many jobs that cannot go digital.
Yeah, there are. But a large part of it, for example, those that can will. And the skill-based ones, I think for Singapore, I think we would be very happy to be able to have the Malaysians come back and be part of this society. You know, it is an indelible part of Singapore and Singapore society. You know, like what Serena says, many of us don't really see the difference. And I think we all hope we will be able to have what we had before.
And I guess on that point that we can all agree on, I think we'll end this podcast. And there you have it. The complicated relationship between Singapore businesses and Malaysian workers, greatly challenged by the coronavirus pandemic. Thanks to Darius Lim and Serena Ruckman for calling in. Credit for this episode also goes to Christina Robert, our podcast editor, and Erin Low, our research writer. And I'm Lin Su Ling, signing off.